My name is Stefano Bini. I'm the founder and chair of the Digital Orthopedics Conference in San Francisco and your host for the podcast, the Digital Orthopedics Podcast. So our next session is going to be with Joshua Liu. He spoke at DOCSF in 2025. He was our keynote speaker. I was super excited to have him there, as you will hear why in just a minute. As CEO of Seamless MD, a company that's run out of Canada, has done very, very well nationally and internationally. He has been sort of at the forefront of the digital transformation and has a tremendous amount of experience in getting technology into hospitals. And that's really the question I had for him as we sat down in front of the 2025 DOCSF audience to discuss exactly what he thought he had learned in the process. Hope you enjoy the show.
Thank you, Stefano, for the opportunity and everyone for the chance to share my story with you. So I think many of us who are innovators realize that there's not a shortage of inventions and ideas, but getting from invention to broad adoption of innovation, that diffusion is really difficult. And I've learned it the hard way. So today I wanted to share, for me, five brutal truths for getting health systems to actually adopt technology. I come from the software world. So I know a lot of folks are not necessarily in software. Maybe you're in devices or other things, but I think a lot of the lessons are relevant. I started off in the clinical world. I did my training in medicine over a decade ago, and I fell in love with using software to improve the patient journey. So I'll spend one slide on my background and then get to the lessons. But when I looked at the patient journey in my training, I really looked at travel as a great analogy. So imagine you're driving from point A to point B in the past. If you're my age, you had MapQuest, right? Growing up, you'd print out these paper maps, and then we shipped it to GPS. It's faster, it's safer, it's better. Now we're getting to autonomous driving. And my favorite thing about GPS is when you fell off track, it would alarm you and nudge you back on the right track in the right direction. And when I looked at the patient journey, for example, pre and post orthopedic surgery, we would give lots of paper and verbal instructions and patients would forget them, they'd lose them, they'd fall off track. Care teams would say they had no idea what was going on with the patient outside the four walls of the clinic or hospital. And I said, well, what if we could digitize that process and be that GPS for a patient? So over a decade ago, we launched a company called Seamless MD, and we provide a digital GPS. So a patient on SMS, email, phone, web and mobile app, integrated with your patient portal, we navigate patients through that journey, let's say pre and post-op with reminders, education, and symptom monitoring. We collect that data, we send it into the EHR as well, and we allow health systems and providers to reduce length of stay, readmissions, ED visits, cost of care. And today we now support over 150 different conditions, procedures, and treatments. So orthopedics, but also cardiology, women's health, chronic care, and so forth. We work with over 50 health systems and hospitals across the continent. Our partners have done well over 40, probably closer to 50 studies and evaluations showing impact on those outcomes. And we were first to market with turnkey integrations with Epic, Oracle Cerner, and Meditech. Now, when we started this journey, this is the path that everyone told me. And I think if you're an innovator, you were probably told the same thing, right? You pick a clinical problem, and you then build a very tech-only solution, so something that clinicians could just use on their own or with their patients. You know, you don't add on extra services. And the key thing is, if you just did enough studies, did a bunch of RCTs, proved clinical benefit, because, right, we're an evidence-based ecosystem, magically everyone would just adopt that solution. And I believed it. It made sense to me as someone who came from the clinical world. But what I've lived is something more like the picture on the right. The reality for us to get adoption by providers and healthcare systems was far more complicated. And so I want to go through five brutal but counterintuitive truths that I learned, hoping it's going to help a lot of the innovators here to get adoption faster. So brutal truth number one, solving a clinical problem might get you a pilot with a healthcare system, but solving a problem will get you long-term sustainment and scale. Early on, I had some amazing surgeon champions that we worked with. And every time they would say, Josh, come to our hospital, let's run a pilot of your innovation. We're going to, you know, prove that we reduced readmissions or length of stay or something else. And then trust me, after we do all that, we're going to co-present to the C-suite And I guarantee if we can prove those outcomes, they will absolutely pay for this solution and support it long term. Made sense to us. So we'd go and do these 12-month pilots. We'd prove it out. We'd cut readmissions in half. We'd have that meeting with the C-suite of the health system. We're all excited. And I remember on more than one occasion, a CEO would say to me, Josh, these are amazing outcomes. You've cut readmissions in half. This is great for patient care. But reducing readmissions is not a priority here. Maybe we're not affected by CMS readmission penalties. It actually drives revenue for us. We have other problems. This is not one of them. And so we spent over a year doing this only to then realize it was not considered a business problem. Now, there were some other organizations where, let's say, improving readmissions was a positive impact for them, and they did become long-term customers, but that wasn't true for everyone. And so I realized the hard way that as much as we have clinical champions saying this is a problem here, unless we validated early on with that health system that those metrics mattered, we wouldn't get adoption. And so the big lesson was trust yet verify with not just your clinical leaders, but the administrative leaders as well at the organization. Second brutal truth that I learned was one champion may get you a sale in an organization, but you need three champions to get long-term success. Many, many years ago, as we were frustrated with the length of the sales cycle in a health system, we were trying to find ways to shorten it. I remember we had this one hospital. We met this amazing administrative champion. She was a director of quality. She said, this is great. It's going to help me achieve my quality goals. She brought us into the C-suite. They said, this is great. We'll fund this. We'll support it. And we said, okay, well, what about the physician champions? And they said, no, don't worry about it. You know, we're going to sign this contract. We're going to implement it. They'll come on board later. Any physician here would know that that's a bad idea. But we were like, oh, that's great. We've cut the sales cycle short. Perfect. Well, what do you think happened when we tried to implement this solution? Physicians were not happy. You know, and maybe if they had seen it on their own before, they would have bought in. But when this was just forced onto their clinical teams, they just revolted. We could never properly implement it. We couldn't help their patients, and we wasted the time and money of both parties. And so now I tell folks, hey, you know what? Even if you could get a sale in an organization, if you skip that critical step of getting your clinical, admin, and executive sponsors on board, it's just not going to work long term. I'd rather take longer in the process to get folks bought in than just shorten the process and then make it fail in the long term. Number three. And this really bothers me as someone who's clinical and thinks about evidence. I've learned the hard way that no matter how many studies you do, no matter how good the evidence, often that is not enough to get real adoption in the healthcare system. And again, I come from the software world, so it's probably different for devices. But in the software world, you know, you have this thing called the EHR. And one of the things that you find is that even if a company may have a lot more evidence, you've done your studies, you've done your RCTs, if the EHR comes out with a very similar product to you, magically with no evidence, often that's the one the health system will use. And so I learned the hard way that there are all these other factors that affect adoption beyond just, is there evidence? Often it's things such as who else is using it? Is it a partner we already know and trust, like a big EHR? How well is it integrated? And I'm not saying that you can never be what's chosen over a big incumbent or an EHR, but you have to be 10 times better as a startup innovation on some dimension that the health system actually cares about. For us, that sometimes means evidence, but often it's things such as you can implement it way faster, maybe you can do it much cheaper, et cetera, et cetera. But again, you have to know what really matters to the health system, and unfortunately, it's often not evidence. Brutal truth number four. As good as your technology might be, I think we've heard this from a few folks today, a big part of your success has nothing to do with the tech. It has to do with the people in the process and the clinical workflows that come with it. And the reason I know this is because we provide technology that we've deployed to many health systems with similar populations, similar health conditions, and yet there's often a variation in terms of patient adoption and outcomes. So how is it that the same tech has wildly different outcomes depending on how folks implement it? Well, for example, on the technology side, You know, we have a lot of competitors that have flamed out because they thought they could just provide this shell technology and expect physicians and nurses to create all the content, the algorithms, pathways from scratch, implement it on their own. And I don't know about you, but clinicians are pretty busy, right? And so what we found was that clinicians preferred if actually all this content, the workflows came out of the box so they could say, hey, I love 80% of it. Let's tweak the 20% that we do differently here. But this way, I'm not starting from a blank slate. And the second piece around people and process, we found there's so much more to it than just, you know, handing the tech to the teams and the patients, right? We had to spend over a decade refining playbooks on what's the right messaging that a provider should use to educate a patient. What's the right way to put this into the workflow? At what time point should you educate the patients on this? What are the right posters and brochures to put up? All these things that have nothing to do with the tech, you had to package and playbook to actually make it successful for the care teams. And then the last thing I'll leave you with is bridge number five. If you're in the patient space like I am, you realize very quickly that if you just provide tech to patients, they don't magically come. I'll give you a personal story from very recently. So I was seeing a physician for a medical issue, and they said, hey, Josh, I have this great resource for you. Here's the QR code. I took my phone out, took my camera out, and it took me to a PDF to educate me on it. I'm like, that's not the most tech savvy thing, but like, you know, I can read it. I'll use the PDF. I go home, I log into my patient portal because I was playing around with it, and I noticed that my health system had a digital tool that I could have used to help me navigate the same issue. But they never told me about it. And I realized that this initiative that could have gone to me failed because of people and process, right? My physician either didn't know about this digital tool or didn't trust it or didn't know how to explain it to me, all kinds of reasons. But that tech being there didn't mean that I would actually use and engage with it. And frankly, because they didn't tell me anything, I don't even know if I should trust it. And so providing the tech alone doesn't do anything. You need the change management, the promotion, the marketing to actually make it work. And what we found is that you need, for example, most importantly, the physician to even spend 5 seconds saying, hey, we have this thing, you should use it, it helps our patients. That's the number one thing that's correlated with adoption from patients, hearing it from their physician, among many other things. So I'll leave you with that. I hope that gave you some insight into how it's way more than just about tech. And Stefano, thank you for the opportunity. I'd love to answer any questions.
So thank you very much. Round of applause. I think you've been at it for a decade now, about?
Sorry, what's that?
It's about 10 years you've been running?
Yeah, more than 10. Yeah.
Yeah, so it's distillation of a lot of just experience, which is amazing. So from our perspective, it's one thing hearing you talk about it. It's our, for those of us who try to innovate within health systems, it's also, it's good to see the same framework because we can leverage it as well. I thought everything you said was so self-evident and so well phrased. I'm not going to go back on that. I want to go to a couple of things you've been talking about recently, which is the role of AI in healthcare. And curious, are you guys integrating much in terms of agents or that sort of technology in your workflows?
Yeah. So the way I think about it, like agentic AI for, let's say, for the patient journey right now, we're seeing it play out, not with us, but with others focused on more of the non-clinical things. So from a risk perspective, health systems are saying, hey, if I use agents to, you know, eliminate call centers and shift more of the work to agents to scheduling appointments or whatnot, they're more willing to do that because it's not going to create a clinical risk or a safety issue. And I think what we've realized that's really powerful, but what we've done is that we have the clinical content around the journeys that clinicians have already signed off on with us at their health system. And so we're implementing conversational AI where a patient could say, hey, you know, it's 7 days before my surgery. What should I do today? Because we have the pathways that, let's say, you've signed off on if you were using us, it's going to give them the right answer for UCSF or Dr. Meany. And that's better than it pulling something from Reddit about what a patient should do a week pre-op. So having that content and then adding in the AI, I think will be really helpful.
That's super powerful. Because, of course, the biggest concern a lot of people have getting these off-the-shelf platforms is that, well, I don't, you know, maybe I use sutures till day 6 or something, and then I don't want the patient to be told to take them off at day 8 because then it raises a lot of havoc. Talking about autonomous AI in healthcare delivery, you posted about this recently. Do you think we're going to see it anytime soon?
I don't think in the short term. I think one of the really unique things about healthcare is that, unlike, say, tech support and chat, where it's okay if you screw up and you give the wrong answer about someone's insurance or about, you know, your telecom, you know, phone bill or whatnot. I think the risk factors in patient care are just too high to go autonomous. I think what's more likely, though, is that we're going to see a stepwise fashion of things. So I think what we're seeing is, from a physician point of view, you're going to be comfortable using AI as a co-pilot so that you can validate the output before it gets sent to a patient. But I think the reality is that validation you're giving to it is going to be more training data to eventually get to something that could be autonomous down the road. But I think we're going to have to take a stepwise fashion to get there.
Terrific. I want to thank you for coming down and giving us this great talk. I'm going to take some of our time back to catch up on our schedule. But thank you so much. Such a pleasure to have you here.
Thanks, Bon. I appreciate it.